This is Dave Nadler with the Four Stream Podcast, where we measure science, philosophy, and faith to help make sense out of what we see happening around us. And today, we're talking about indulging ourselves.
As we look at the Ten Commandments, we're trying to decide, okay, if they were given to us because of the bondage that we were in and that we are in, what about the freedom that God was providing with the Ten Commandments? And the idea was that you shall love the Lord your God with all your heart, soul, mind, and strength, and you will love your neighbor as you love yourself, and you will find deliverance from the need behind why these commandments were given. The commandments weren't given in the garden. They weren't given the day after. They were given hundreds of years after many things had happened. Creation, fall, flood, tower. Many people, many circumstances. Then comes Abraham, and after Abraham, Isaac, Jacob, and Joseph. Then come the commandments. And so it's almost like God was watching what was happening to humanity, like not like he didn't know it was going to happen. And as he watches it, he determines, hey, I need to be clear about how to set these people free. So as you think about your mind and your heart, and your body, and your soul, and you think about your conscience, I would really encourage you to go through the exercise of bringing each one of the commandments into your conscience. Okay? Y'all with me? I know there's a lot of movement going on right now, but y'all with me? Yeah? And what is it that Dave said about it? Bring it on. Right on. Whatever. Yeah. Come on. Come on, man. But anyway, as I think about bringing adultery into the arena of my conscience, not an exciting process. I wasn't excited to do that and think about it, especially because I know what Jesus said. You know, if you even look on a woman with adultery in your heart, you have committed adultery already. Well, you know, how can you deal with that? You know, I'm a red-blooded American man. I'm an older man now, but I live my life in the context of watching God, first of all, in the first 22 years of my life, not manage anything because I didn't believe in God, and then watch God now be able to come into each one of the commandments and show me how to live free rather than to live in bondage. And there's so many aspects to that. But the conscience is where our intent is. It's where the mind and the heart and the soul and the body, where that conversation happens. And each one of the commandments were given to us to basically define things in order to set us free. And so that's what we've been looking at. And I've been noticing things off from this list, which has been really good, because when you put all of the commandments together and then you put the me gods next to them, side by side, you start observing things. And the thing I noticed is that the first five commandments, which pivot with honor your father and your mother, when that pivot happens, that's when the things that humanity does to one another start being amplified and start being discussed. And so when we looked at murder last week, and now we'll be talking about adultery and then stealing and deception. These are the things that we do to one another to not love one another. And it's just been interesting to see how they unfold, and then to think about adultery and the idea of how self-indulgent adultery is, but then how at the root of that, in order to decide to commit adultery, you have to become disloyal. And that's what kind of stuck out to me. And I think whether you have ever contemplated adultery or not, or whether you have ever committed adultery or not, I think we can both have common ground in the circle related to that whole idea of being loyal to other people. And it's a horrible thing, you know, when you choose to be disloyal. Or when somebody chooses to be disloyal to you. It's very complicated. It's very, it just kind of, it just consumes the soul. Whether you're on the adulterous side or the one who has had adultery committed toward them. And that's what I want to dig into a little bit today, looking at that loyalty idea right alongside of adultery. So let's just kind of get the thread. So if you turn over to Leviticus chapter 20, and all of you teenagers are back just in time because we're jumping into the particulars of adultery. Very exciting, something you'll be able to share at school with your friends. Hey, I was home this weekend and I was thinking about adultery. Leviticus 20 is like jam-packed. I mean, it's one of those chapters that nobody in the PC, socially just world wants to even see in it. That is one of the reasons why we say, oh, that was Old Testament. That's what they did in the Old Testament. That doesn't have anything to do with what's happening in the New Testament now. The problem that you run into with that is if you really listen to the words of Jesus, and one of the primary things that Jesus taught us is that he did not come to abolish the law, but to fulfill it. Every line, every part, he's fulfilling. And so this thread, chapter 20, verse 10, if there is a man who commits adultery with another man's wife, the one who commits adultery with his friend's wife, the adulterer and the adulteress shall surely be put to death. Harsh, right? That's pretty harsh. Why was that necessary? Why don't we apply that now? Well, maybe in some cultures they do. You know, some of those more advanced cultures that we're lifting up all the time. You know, it is happening in the world. But in this idea and in this picture right here is one of the severity of God when it comes to what does adultery do? What does adultery do to a couple? To a family? What does adultery do to a community? What does it do to a city? What does it do to the fabric of a group of people? And see, God understood this. And that's why he told his children, the Jews, and he said, you shall not commit adultery. Because implicit in your adultery is disloyalty. And if you remember before, those upper commandments, those are all about loyalty to God. What in the world? What in the world makes us think that if we can't even be loyal to somebody that is right in front of us, how in the world are we ever going to be loyal to God? And that's what kind of struck me as I was looking at it, because no other gods, no idols, no empty value, enter my rest. Those are all talking about loyalty, about being loyal to God. So, you know, it's not just a list of things that are disconnected. These are like incredibly connected. So that's how they dealt with it in the Jewish nation, because they were a nation that went from 0 to 60 when it came to numbers of people. Pretty soon they were dealing with millions of people. They didn't have the beautiful government like we have in most of the world to take care of and manage people. So they needed to be managed from the inside out. But, you know, that's too difficult. So let's come up with strategies to deal with it from the outside, right? Because it's so rampant. So that led me in my thread, and there's a lot of passages here. I'm just kind of like putting together the ones that related a little bit to loyalty. But if you turn over to Proverbs chapter 6, consult Lady Wisdom for a moment. Proverbs chapter 6, verse 32. The one who commits adultery with a woman is out of their mind. Now, in my translation, it says, is lacking sense, but I think it's fair. Because what leads up to adultery? To become disloyal to the point where you act is crazy. Why is it crazy? It's because of what it does inside. You know, there's a lot of reasons that people commit adultery, and I suppose some of them might be good reasons. Some people get treated pretty poorly. At least that's my observation. He who would destroy himself does it. Pretty straightforward. Wounds and disgrace he will find. Think about that, the wounds. Wounds and disgrace he will find. And his reproach will not be blotted out. It doesn't just go away. You like it, you want it to go away, you want to scrub over it, you want to whitewash it, but it doesn't go away. For jealousy enrages a man, and he will not spare in the day of vengeance. He will not accept any ransom, nor will he be satisfied, though you give him many gifts. And that's what happens between people. Now, thank God, that's not what happens between us and God. Because God had two very adulterous children. And they were Judah and Israel. Israel in the north and Judah in the south. And woven through this whole teaching on adultery is how God continued to invite his children to reject their idolatry, because that was inseparably tied with their adultery, because that's what God called it. It was adultery. They were adulterating themselves, leaving him as their husband and clinging to somebody else. But fortunately, our God, well, he doesn't approve of everything we do, obviously. He apparently understands our frame. And he knows that we are dust. And he's made room for that. He's made allowances for that. So that leads me to later in the prophets. And you can see why, you know, the prophets are like, so, oh, what a downer. One downer after another. But what you got to realize is that, yes, it's tough talk, but it was all meant to tell the truth so that people could live in the truth and not live in a lie. Hosea 6, verse 4. And this is talking about the sisters. This is where I got it. What shall I do with you, O Ephraim in the north, Israel? What shall I do with you, O Judah, in the south? For your loyalty is like a morning cloud and like the dew which goes away early. And how we act toward a spouse, or how we act toward friends, or how we act toward our children, all of that is tied up in our personal loyalty, not only to them, but to the one who created us. And when we choose to go down the road of disloyalty, which you have to do in order to commit adultery, it has to happen. And I'm not just talking about husbands and wives. There are lots of different things underneath this umbrella of adultery, because it all has to do with disloyalty. So, you know, whenever you're following a thread all the way through, obviously you want to find what the big guy had to say about it. And when I say the big guy, I mean Jesus, because he's the one that comes riding on the white horse and he's concerned, right? Matthew chapter 5, verse 27. Hey, you've heard that it's said, you shall not commit adultery. But I say to you that everyone who looks on a woman with lust for her has already committed adultery with her in his heart. If you're, and this goes together now, what he's going to say with the adultery and the statement about it. If your right eye makes you stumble, rip it out and throw it away from you. If your right eye is going to cause you to be disloyal, is he telling everybody to pull their eyes out of their heads just because they're having adulterous thoughts? I don't think so. He's trying to explain it's better for you to lose one of the parts of your body than for your whole body to be thrown into hell. What's the context? The context is adultery, right? If your right hand makes you stumble, cut it off and throw it from you. As if the other analogy wasn't severe enough. For it is better for you to lose one of the parts of your body than for your whole body to go into hell. And then he goes on to talk about the context of divorce. He has said, whoever sends his wife away, let him give her a certificate of divorce. But I, the big guy, but I say to you that everyone who divorces his wife, except for the reason of unchastity, makes her commit adultery. And whoever marries a divorced woman commits adultery. That's Jesus. That's not the prophets. So what do we take from that? I mean, especially when we live in a culture that has just basically gone mad in the area of any kind of vows whatsoever. It's like vows, let alone marriage vows. And believe me, I've done my share of bringing people together and helping them say their vows, whether they make up their own and read them or whether they read stock vows, which can be pretty good. But you look at all of that and you go, okay, well, at the core of this is an issue of loyalty. And, you know, I think I said early on, I haven't committed adultery physically. I haven't done that, okay? You can have confidence that me fulfilling my role, I've not done that. You cannot have confidence in the fact that I have never looked upon a woman and committed adultery in my heart. You can't have confidence about that. I don't have confidence about that. But what I've learned from God about adultery and the rest of these things in the list of five that are right here, which we'll be talking about, so this is kind of the context for it, I find over in John chapter 8, verse 1. So if you feel like my goal is to make you feel bad by talking about adultery, which you don't have to if you haven't committed adultery, so what's the big deal, right? That wasn't the point of this. It's not the point of any of the commandments. The point of the commandments isn't to say, you're bad. You don't measure up to the glory of God. But Jesus went to the Mount of Olives. Early in the morning, he came again to the temple, and all the people were coming to him, and he sat down and he began to teach them. The scribes and the Pharisees, our buddies, hauled in a woman caught in adultery, and having set her in the center of the court. Now think about it, they did all this without any kind of Apple products. Somehow they were able to figure out and know that this woman was committing adultery. And they grabbed a hold of her, ostensibly in her adulterous act, and they dragged her into the temple. And having set her in the center of the court, they said to him, teacher, this woman has been caught in adultery, the very act. Now, in the law of Moses, he commanded us to stone such women. What do you say? That's why we looked at Leviticus, because that's the backdrop for this. You know, nothing about it was commanded that you would stone her and you would also stone the person who was committing adultery with her. That's not a new way that we modify things. The scribes and the Pharisees were masters at taking the word of God and leaving out the things that they wanted to leave out and holding on to the things that that served their purposes. Verse 6, they were saying this, testing Jesus so that they might have grounds for accusing him. But Jesus stooped down with his finger and wrote on the ground. Now me, I would have gone into an argument right there. Because I like to argue, and I would have said something very disrespectful about you old goats. You know, because I would have had no patience for this. But I'm not Jesus. What did Jesus do? As always, he did exactly what was needed. Just like he does in your life every time you need him. He always gives you and me exactly what we need. But Jesus stooped down, and with his finger he wrote on the ground. But when they persisted in asking him, he straightened up, and he said to them, "He who is without sin among you, let him be the first to throw a stone at her." I don't know what he wrote on the ground. It's not recorded here. I bet you we'll find out in heaven when we get to, you know, see the video. Again, he stooped down and he wrote on the ground. He asks a question. He does it again. When they heard it, they began to go out one by one. Now, why did they go out one by one? Because they had read whatever he had written on the ground. It had to be. It totally turned this whole situation around. It began with the older ones, and I assume that that meant that they were like wiser or something. I don't know if we can count on that. I hope so. And he was left alone, and the woman there where she was in the center of the court. And this is actually one of the most touching passages in Scripture for my heart. You've heard me probably teach about it before, and every time I go back to it, I don't have any trouble not wanting to be any of the characters, disciples, any of the religious leaders. I'm certainly not Jesus. But when he starts interacting with this woman, I go, oh, that's me. That's my character. Straightening up, and they were center court together, straightening up, Jesus said to her, "Woman, where are they? Did no one condemn you?" And she said, "No one, Lord." I wonder if she could see what was written in the dirt. I don't know. Good question. Hopefully we'll get that answered someday. And Jesus said to her, check this out, "I do not condemn you either. Go now and sin no more." Then Jesus again spoke to them, saying, with her there and with the disciples, he said, "I am the light of the world. He who follows me will not walk in the darkness, but will have the light of life." What did that mean to that woman? What did it mean to have been paraded out into the middle of the temple arena and to hear that from the Son of God? We won't have time to go through this other passage, but we can just kind of look at it briefly because the kids will be coming back here soon. But look over to 2 Peter 2. And I was going to try to excerpt something from it, but I just couldn't, because it's such a great description of not just people, but of angels, kind of every created being. Did the angels commit adultery? Yeah, they weren't even capable of it, but they figured out a way to do it. And as you look through verses 1 through 22 of chapter 2, you might want to just read it just for a backdrop, because it animates what adultery looks like. You know, it would be easy if you could just boil it down to a man and a woman sleeping together with somebody that wasn't, that they weren't married to. Just two verses for you. Verse 1, "But false prophets also arose among the people, just as there will also be false teachers among you, who will secretly introduce destructive heresies, even denying the master who bought them, bringing swift destruction upon themselves." And the last verse, verse 22, because you have to see the context, but these are the bookends of this particular chapter. "It has happened to them, according to the true proverb, a dog returns to its own vomit, and a sow, after washing, returns to wallowing in mire." And that's how God feels about disloyalty. Is adultery negotiable? God in heaven, it better be, based on Jesus' definition. But what about loyalty? What about loyalty? What about you shall have no other gods before me. So that's a little added thing you can look at. It's a whole chapter. It expands that whole idea of what adultery looks like. But there's no way we'd have time. That'd be a whole nother conversation to have together. So we want to bring these subjects and these issues and these heart issues, we want to bring them in to the arena of our conscience. And I don't know what talking about adultery, if you just sat there and went, well, this doesn't have anything to do with me. Well, okay. I mean, before your own master, you're going to stand or fall just like I am, right? So, but I don't know what that amplified for you when it came to adultery. I've managed and I've understood the adultery part. The disloyalty part, though, I'm still learning about. I'm still learning about it as a spiritual man. And I want to be a loyal man. I expect loyalty. I expect it from my friends. I expect it from my kids. I expect it from my wife. They expect it from me. But I have a lot of living yet to do. So consequently, I have a lot of experience that.
Thanks for listening to this conversation about self-indulgence. You can find additional resources at forestream.com. We are dedicated to finding hope and enjoying a clear conscience.